Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more. Dr. Lisa.
Hi, Claire.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm always happy to be back here in the studio with you.
Yeah, I like being here too.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a really interesting topic today, I think.
Yeah.
I'm all ears to hear about osteoporosis.
Yeah.
And going beyond calcium.
Yes, because there is so much more involved than calcium.
Yeah, and I think we just kind of get the sort of surface information.
Right. So let's just dive in, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. The first thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, who's at risk? And I'd like to encourage anyone who's listening that maybe isn't an older female, that it would be important for you to listen. And I feel like, you know, many older women who have developed osteoporosis maybe wish they would have done some things different earlier in their lives. And so I'd encourage any younger females and males, because osteoporosis happens in males also, to just stay tuned and hear what we have to say about how to decrease your risk of getting osteoporosis.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can head it off before it happens.
Right. Prevention is key. And so it is true that women are more at risk for osteoporosis, and there's several reasons for this. One of them is, you know, has to do with women in general have less bone mass, and also they have less muscle mass. And it's actually the muscles that put stress on the bones that help to make them stronger. And so because women generally have less muscle than men, we maybe don't build quite as strong as bones as men do.
So I'm just kind of curious, when do we have the most bone?
Yeah, from what I've learned, it's in our 20s is when we actually build most of our bone. And so this is actually a time when you want to make sure that you're exercising, because exercising helps to build strong bones, and we're going to be talking about that. But just, you know, it's earlier in life that actually we build most of our bone. So the next thing that I was going to mention as far as women being more at risk has to do with hormones, and it's estrogen and progesterone. And so when women go through menopause, their estrogen and progesterone decrease. And so I'm going to get a little scientific here now and just talk about what estrogen and progesterone do. First there's the cells called osteoclasts and osteoblasts. And the osteoclasts actually break down our bone. The osteoblasts, they actually build up the bone. And so estrogen inhibits osteoclasts. So it actually inhibits the breakdown of bone. So So at menopause, we have a decrease in estrogen. So our osteoclasts are not inhibited like they had been for most of our life. And so they can cause excessive breakdown of bone.
Well, my little story was I once had a heel scan.
Uh-huh.
And they told me I had the bones of a 28-year-old. Wow. And I was like 49.
Yeah.
And then about 5 or 6 years later, I'd been through menopause and I had the same heel scan. And they told me I had really good bones for a 55-year-old.
Well, that's
I was like,
good.
wait.
No, at least they didn't tell you that you had the bones of an 80-year-old. I thought you were going to say that. And I was like, no.
But I was pretty shocked at the change.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's true. It's true. And then progesterone also decreases after menopause, and progesterone actually stimulates osteoblasts. Those are the cells that build our bone. And so when we have a decrease in progesterone, then we're maybe not building as much bone as we had been previously. So hormones definitely play a part in that, in osteoporosis.
So do you think if people do take HRT, that that's good for...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a whole nother story.
How about bioidentical?
Yeah, bioidentical hormones. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. I do think it can be helpful for building, keeping your bones strong. But I also do think there's risks that go along with it too. And so, yeah, we can save okay. that for another topic.
Thanks for clearing that
yes,
up for me.
Yes, but it's definitely helpful for your bones. So actually, I was going to say a statistic, you know, 1 in 4 women will develop osteoporosis after menopause. So it is fairly common condition among women who've gone through menopause. But men are also at risk. It just happens at an older age, and it's usually after 70 years old. So men, make sure you're listening.
Could I just add in here that in case someone's just tuned in, that you're listening to Dr. Lisa and Claire, the Island Health Sisters, and Peak Health, our radio show at 101.9 FM KVSH.
Yes, voice of Ashan. Okay. I want to just mention that hip fracture is actually one of the worst fractures, and it leads to death in 12 to 20% of cases. In other cases, 50%, and usually people end up in nursing home care. So, yeah, we definitely want to prevent, you know, a fall, osteoporosis and falls, because it's going to decrease quality of life. So the next thing we're going to talk about is why conventional medicine is not necessarily the answer. And this is kind of a touchy subject because I'm sure, you know, there's probably many of you out there that are on what we call bisphosphonate drugs, because that's what the standard treatment is by conventional medicine. So I'm going to just talk a little bit how these drugs work. They actually inhibit osteoclast activity. And again, like I mentioned before, these cell, the osteoclasts are the cells that are designed to remove worn out, you know, injured or damaged bone. And when we take these medications, it's inhibiting those cells. And so we can actually be retaining old brittle bones. And they're, it's
not a great thought.
It's not a good situation. No. And there's actually, it's more rare, but there's been 2,000 reported cases of osteonecrosis of the jaw in patients taking bisphosphonate drugs. And so osteonecrosis of the jaw is a condition where the jawbone actually breaks down. It's necrotic and it dies. And so it's, you know, a difficult condition where it results in people, they can't eat very well, you know, they have a lot of pain and disfigurement and reduced quality of life. And so, although it is, you know, somewhat rare, it is something to consider.
Well, and I hadn't thought of that joint, the jaw, as a joint that could be affected by osteoporosis.
Yeah.
But it makes sense.
Yeah, it's
not just hips.
Right, it's wrist. A highly used joint, the jaw, because we're constantly chewing, you know, at least 3 times a day. And so it's very sensitive to that. And dentists are actually hesitant to do dental work on patients who are taking bisphosphonate drugs, which are the drugs used to treat osteoporosis. The American Dental Association has advised dentists to create what they call an informed consent form to notify patients who are taking bisphosphonates of the risks of osteonecrosis of the jaw, and that when they get dental work, it actually may result in problems with osteonecrosis. Like it may become more evident that the person has osteonecrosis of the jaw. And so, yeah, something to consider. But also, so besides osteonecrosis of the jaw, certain types of fractures, low impact fractures of the femur.
And the femur is?
The femur, sorry. Yes, I'm getting all scientific here. That's our thigh bone. So low impact fractures of the femur, it's actually been added as the side effect of at least one of the bisphosphonate medications, so potential side effect, which is, seems odd because aren't these drugs supposed to prevent fractures?
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, why are they prescribing these drugs? What's the balance then?
Well, I mean, I know that there has been studies that have shown that they are helpful. I mean, they are helpful for reducing fractures, but everyone is individual and, you know, it may help one person, but not somebody else. So it's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah, that it's becoming more and more evident in a lot of medical situations. So let's see, you've talked about who's at risk, gave us a few statistics. We're talking a little bit about why conventional medicine may not be the answer. Mm-hmm. I think that's where you get your title for going beyond calcium.
Yeah. Well, no.
No? Okay.
Kind of, because just the fact that, you know, we don't want to just look at calcium when we're thinking about how to deal with osteoporosis. There's so much more involved.
Well, okay. So maybe you could give us some ideas on how to protect ourselves or decrease the risk.
Well, I just wanted to mention one other thing, other side effects of bisphosphonate drugs. Atrial fibrillation is one of them. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it has to do with our heart. And our heart has different chambers, and the atria is one of the chambers. And what happens is that the atria starts to beat erratically too fast, and it can cause problems like stroke and blood clots and things. So it's a pretty serious problem. Also, erosions of the GI lining or GI tract or damage to that can be caused by as a potential side effect of bisphosphonate drugs. And then severe muscle pains is another side effect. So
none of those sound like any fun at all.
You know, they're just all things to consider, you know, when you're considering whether you want to start medication or not.
Okay, so let's decrease the risk.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the title of this topic is going beyond calcium, but I am going to start with calcium. We want to try to get most of our calcium from foods because there have been studies that showed that taking calcium supplements or too much calcium supplements is correlated with an increased risk of coronary artery disease, which is, you know, heart attack, because the calcium, excess calcium, we don't want that to deposit in our vessels. And with supplements, there's a higher risk of that depositing in our vessels and causing inflammation and blockage of the arteries. So from diet, you know, dairy, of course, is the biggest, you know, what we hear about is the biggest source, but also salmon is a huge, high source of calcium, as well as leafy greens. So spinach, collards, kale, and then as well as sesame seeds, that actually is a really high source of calcium. And so if you're going to eat sesame seeds, I recommend that you grind them, because just trying to eat the seed on its own, you're not going to digest it very well. So grinding them up and maybe putting them on your cereal or on your salad or something is a great way to get calcium.
Just as a little aside, if I want to grind seeds like flaxseed or sesame seeds, I have a coffee grinder that I only grind seeds with.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I put them in a baggie and keep them in the freezer.
Good. Okay. How long do you keep them? Oh, in the freezer. Okay, yeah, that's
and
good.
Well, I'm going to use them, but I mean, I don't leave them out. I try to keep them from oxidizing as much as possible.
Good job. Good job, Claire. Yeah, I know. We only have one coffee grinder right now, and my husband grinds his coffee. And then when I want to go and grind something, I get very upset because I don't want my seeds to taste like coffee.
I totally support that.
So we actually have one on
order. I don't drink coffee like that, so I don't have that problem.
Oh, yes.
I would just have seedy coffee instead of coffee seeds.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so as far as calcium supplements, if you are going to take a supplement, you know, I recommend you talk to your doctor about it, but you want to take calcium citrate, not carbonate. Carbonate is not as easily as absorbed, and so citrate is one of the better forms of that. But again, I do recommend that you talk to your doctor about it, making sure that you're not taking too much.
Okay. Is a standard dose like on most supplements?
Well, it's hard to say. There's so many different supplements. You know, what I've heard is, you know, recommended, and don't quote me here, but it's around 1,000 milligrams per day. But again, we want to get that mostly in food. I think from what I remember from my education at Bastyr, when learning about, you know, in taking calcium supplements and the relation to increased heart disease, that we don't want to really take more than, you know, 400 or 500 milligrams of supplemental form. So, and I don't know.
And then the rest comes from food.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And can calcium, you can't take it all at once. Haven't I heard that you're supposed to spread it out a little bit?
That's a good question.
It doesn't get absorbed
so.
As well.
Yeah. I think
if you take it all at once.
Yeah. That is a good recommendation in general for a lot of multivitamins. That's why sometimes multivitamins will be three different pills. Take one pill three times a day. So, unless you're taking a one a day. But anyways. Okay. So next thing is making sure you have enough stomach acid. And this is actually a risk with increasing age. Our stomach acid tends to decrease. And the reason that we need the stomach acid for strong bones is because it helps us absorb minerals properly. So if we don't have adequate stomach acid, then we're not absorbing our minerals and, you know, our bones are at risk for becoming weak. And so,
boy, it sure is interesting how everything's connected.
It is. Yeah. And so some of the things, you know, I recommend for making sure you have enough stomach acid is to eat in a relaxed environment, because that's, you know, being in the, what we call the parasympathetic nervous system mode, which we've talked about on other shows, the calm mode, it helps our stomach acid to be released. And then also, you can try a little bit of lemon squeezed in warm water before meals, or some apple cider vinegar. It's helpful for increasing your stomach acid. And of course, if you have any questions about it, see your naturopath.
So, and I think I know the answer to this, but you'd want to either use fresh lemon if you could, but you could use lemon juice, but might have other.
Yeah, the bottled lemon juice. I mean, if it's going to come down between doing it and not doing it, use the bottled. But but the bottle does have preservatives that are not favorable for us.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we said getting enough calcium, making sure you have enough stomach acid, and then the diet. Diet is huge. We want to have an alkalinizing diet. Not acidifying. When we have an acidic diet, which I'm going to talk about what that is, but that actually causes minerals to be leached from our bones to actually balance the acidic state of our body. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but maybe you should talk just briefly about pH.
So like pH, you probably learned this in chemistry when you were in seventh grade or something, but pH of water is typically 7. And when things are more acidic, they have a lower pH, so between 1 and 6, and then alkalinizing is above 7.
And it has something to do with hydrogen ions, I believe.
Yeah. You're really challenging me here now, Claire, to go back to seventh grade chemistry. But anyway, certain foods, when we eat them, create a more acidic state in our body, and certain ones create more alkaline state. And protein is actually acidifying. So meats and some dairy products. Actually, meats are the most acidifying foods. There's kind of a scale, you know, you can look this kind of stuff up on the internet if you have the internet, alkaline versus acidic foods. And they usually have a scale, you know, most acidifying, you know, moderately acidifying, mildly acidifying. And then same thing with alkaline, you know, mildly, moderate, and most alkalinizing food. So meat is the highest acidic food.
So if you eat like meat and something that's
alkalinizing. Yeah.
Do they balance each other out?
Yeah, they do. And so I'm certainly not saying do not eat meat, because I do think meat is nutritious. So it's just making sure that you're balancing it. You're not having an all acidic meal. You're having, you know, lots of vegetables, in fact, more vegetables than the meats.
And right. So, in my travels of nutrition, I usually say one serving of meat to two servings of vegetables.
Great.
That is, and then we have to discuss what servings are.
But. Yes, totally. So anyways, back to protein. So so other proteins like dairy, they are, depending on the dairy, some are acidifying. Actually, most, I think, are acidifying. But you want to figure out how much protein you should be eating per day. And the general recommendation is 0.8 grams per kilogram of protein per day. So if I was 150 pounds,
2.2 pounds okay. per kilogram.
Okay, so divide by 2.2.
Correct.
So it would be like 65 or something like that, I think.
Close
65.
Enough.
Yeah, yeah. No. So then you would take, okay, I'm 65 kilograms, and then take 0.8 times that. And it would be about 50 grams a day of protein. And so just to give you an idea, just like a 4-ounce hamburger patty is about 20 grams of protein. So if you had two hamburgers, you're up to 40 grams.
Well, you could reach your max rather quickly.
Yeah, you could. You could, depending on your diet. So, you know, just making sure that you're not eating too much protein, because that will create an acidic state in your body. And then, you know, your minerals are going to come out of your bones. We want to keep them in the bones. So also avoiding refined sugars like high fructose corn syrup. That actually is acidifying and leaches calcium from the bones. And then soda. Soda actually has high phosphate levels, which cause calcium to be leached from our bones. So, just, I mean, and there's other things with soda, obviously.
Yeah, just the whole sugar.
Yeah, part. Sugar or fake sugar if you're drinking diet. Or...
I would say that I had heard that people who drink soda often drink less milk.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some controversy about what was actually the cause. Was it the fact that they just weren't drinking milk?
Mm.
Or was it that the soda was leaching? And so yeah. I don't remember what the outcome of that was. But
that's interesting. Yeah. I bet you if you did a comparison, that would be an interesting experiment.
It would be. It would be. And then you'd have to have it repeated and then done by some third party any vested interest
that's
in
true.
Soda or milk.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So my last plug for diet is just, eat your leafy greens. They're highly alkalinizing and they're full of minerals, calcium, vitamin K, boron, magnesium. Yeah. Before we move on to the next thing for decreasing our risk, I just want to say this is 101.9 FM, KVSH, Voice of Vashon. This is Dr. Lisa and Claire, and we're talking about osteoporosis today. Okay, so the next thing is B vitamins. B vitamins are involved in a process called methylation.
Can I just remind you, we're talking about things that decrease our risk, right?
Yes, okay. We are.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, so B vitamins are involved in a process called methylation. And if we have a deficiency in B vitamins, this results in excess homocysteine in our body. Some of you may have heard of it before, but actually homocysteine has been shown to contribute to heart disease, stroke, dementia, and then weak bones also. And so I usually recommend my patients take a B vitamin supplement. Again, it's important to have a whole foods healthy diet that is high in B vitamins. But the thing with B vitamins is that they're water soluble. And so they aren't stored in our bodies like the fat soluble vitamins like vitamin A, E, D, and K. And so,
I get what that means. That means if there's an excess, that you just,
You urinate it out.
Hang around for the next day when you might need it.
Right. So that's why I recommend people take supplements. So it's common to have a deficiency. Stress, it uses a lot of B vitamins, as well as oral contraceptives and also metformin. So people who have diabetes, that's a diabetes medication, their B vitamins actually get depleted faster than other people's. And so
if you were on metformin, for instance, and you did take B vitamins, that would be good because it would help to replenish the depletion mm-hmm. that the metformin was causing.
Yes, I do recommend you talk to your doctor, though, because sometimes people who are diabetic, they may have kidney problems also, and too many B vitamins can be hard on the kidneys. So, but in theory, I mean, yes, since metformin depletes B vitamins, you know, it's good to make sure you're getting enough B vitamins. And so maybe in that case, it's more diet. And so as far as B vitamins, it's mostly meats and dairy foods, but there's a lot of other foods that contain the B vitamin. And there's a lot of different B vitamins. You know, there's thiamine, niacin, vitamin B12, and riboflavin. And so there's a website that I use.
Folic acid is one also?
Yes, yes, absolutely. There's a website that I've used. It's called World's Healthiest Foods. And they actually show you, you know, if you want to look up a certain vitamin, it'll say what foods have the highest amount of that vitamin.
So, I use nutritiondata.com.
Okay, great.
The reason I like that one is because, well, if it has a food label, you might not want to really be eating it. So if you do want to know what's in a fresh yes. food, like broccoli or a burger or whatever, if you go to nutritiondata.com, it gives you the vitamin, the mineral content. It gives you, you know, percentages of carbohydrate, if there is any, and fat, and protein, and so forth. So
that's great.
It's good to have a couple of those in your back pocket.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to be too detailed about this, or maybe you don't really need to be too detailed, but you know, the one suggestion just I want to validate with you is eating just a rainbow every day. So you get a lot of color. It's pretty hard to get that color without eating lots of fruits and vegetables, particularly mm-hmm. vegetables, because they're lower in sugar.
Yeah. It's great. I love it. Eat the rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then let's see, let's move on to the last one is vitamin C. So we said calcium, making sure you have enough stomach acid, you know, working on an alkalinizing diet, B vitamins to make sure that you're, decreasing your homocysteine, and then vitamin C. So vitamin C is essential for assisting in the formation of bone. And so, again, I just recommend you to check out, you know, World's Healthiest Foods or Nutrition Data, but it's mostly, you know, fruits and vegetables that have vitamin C. Some of the highest ones are strawberries and,
tomatoes, peppers.
Red peppers. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and also, doctor, that vitamin C is also water soluble.
Correct.
So mm-hmm. you need to eat it every day.
Yes, totally.
Doesn't
yeah.
store up.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are some of the things to decrease your risk. And actually, I think we're out of time for today. So we're going to have to continue this talk next time.
Okay. I think we're talking about other risks.
Yeah. We're going to talk about just some other risks of...
How do you know if you've got osteoporosis?
Yeah. How do you know if you have it? And then... Strong bones for life, naturally.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so we're going to talk about what we can do, what vitamins, and yeah, just kind of go over that again and exercise and stuff like that.
Well,
so,
as usual, it was great to talk with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope you guys will tune in next time when we finish up our talk on osteoporosis. And I'm Dr. Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island. And if you're interested in finding support, you have osteoporosis and you want some support, you can send me a message by going to my website, ferncovenaturalmedicine.com.
And I'm Claire Denise, a health coach. If you would like to work on some behavior change, a coach is a great way to have support and accountability. So thanks for tuning in today. And we'll look forward to connecting with you on our next show, finishing up with osteoporosis.
Yeah, this is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you desire. Thanks for listening, and until next time, remember to take care of your body. It's the only one you have.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay. Dr. Lisa.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.